This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome along to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement, in the week when the headlines proclaimed crowds are set to return in low-risk areas, EFL clubs are allowed to use five substitutes for the rest of the season, and Mario Balotelli has held talks with Barnsley. I'm just going to let that one hang in the air. It's the official EFL podcast. There's a rather ominous look about the top of the Sky Bet Championship as it resumes after the international break, with second, third and fourth currently occupied by the three clubs relegated from the Premier League last season, Watford, Norwich City and Bournemouth. The latter now managed by a man who spent 569 matches over 11 years across two spells, winning three promotions as assistant to Eddie Howe. So my first question, Jason Tindall's got to be, how have your first 3 months in charge been?
Looking back, Clem, which I've had a bit of time this last sort of week or so with the international break that we've had, I've been pleased, really, considering the disappointment of getting relegated and, you know, everything that goes with that, the amount of players we lost and, you know, sort of almost having to lift everyone back up again from that disappointment, and reflecting on the first 11 games to have only lost one, I think it's got to be seen as a good start. Although I feel we've had a few draws there that, you know, I think our performances have probably deserved a little bit better. But, you know, on the whole, I think things have gone okay so far.
Lifting the players, is that a new... Is that something that you were already doing as part of your assistant's role? What, I mean, what was the split between you and Ed, and what new things have you had to learn in moving into the main job?
I think with everything that happened, and everything that happened so quickly, in the sense that, you know, we got relegated from the Premier League, probably unexpectedly. And then the quick turnaround. So you're going from, you're getting relegated in the Premier League to a couple of weeks later, you're back preparing for the start of a championship season. And, you know, no one would have wanted to get relegated. A lot of staff lost their jobs and a lot of players left the football club. And the current group of players that have been in the Premier League for so long, obviously that's where they wanted to be and where they wanted to stay. And I think you have to almost pick people up off the floor, so to speak, because of the disappointment that they've just had. And obviously with Eddie no longer the manager as well, and question marks over myself and what that's going to be like. I think it was, you know, it's certainly probably the toughest challenge to start with, to get everybody, you know, sort of fully focused on the job in hand and you know, sort of almost forgetting what's happened in the past and now sort of focusing on the now and the future. And, you know, I think the early results maybe helped that.
I mean, so you're chucked right in at the deep end, because presumably with a mix of personalities, you know, as you've already said, they want to be playing in the Premier League, but you quickly have to decide who's definitely going, who you think you can work on and persuade to stay and stay within budget. There might be some of those that maybe can't be moved on, but have to stay in the squad. That's not just technical prowess on the football field, Jason, is it? You're immediately thrown into man management and in a big, deep way.
Yeah, and I think that was the biggest challenge for me initially was that, you know, because as I said, got relegated and a lot of the players want to play in the Premier League and that's where they still want to be. So, you know, you got the disappointment of them, they want to get back there, and then you've got the speculation linking a lot of players sort of away from the football club, and you're dealing with that as well as all the other sort of, you know, then as manager, you're dealing with all the staff that have, you know, unfortunately lost their jobs, and a lot of uncertainty in terms of what's going on. So, yeah, that was certainly the biggest challenge I've probably had to face. And then you're having to let players know that there's no longer a contract sort of here for them that have been at the club for so long is almost some of your first decisions that you're having to make. So it was a
club legends as well, Jason. Absolute club legends. People that have been on this incredible journey with you, Charlie Daniels, Andrew Sermon, etc. I mean, people that whose names will resonate with the club for ages.
Yeah, and one of my first meetings was with Simon Francis, which was difficult. Yeah. But it was where the club was, and you know, it fell on my shoulders at the time in terms of moving forward and what I felt was best for the club and the squad moving forward. And as a manager, you have to make some big calls and some tough decisions. And I was aware of that. I know that. And, you know, it's part and parcel of the job.
Yeah. Have you had to add certain aspects to your own personality? Have you had to make certain adjustments? Because I guess you're overturning the perception that you're a specialist number two. So there's that kind of stuff floating around. Maybe I always had the perception that you and Eddie as well were good cop, bad cop. Can you guess which one I thought you were? So have you had to switch to being good cop? You know, there's all this stuff as well, isn't it? This changing dynamic, or isn't there? Am I overcomplicating it?
Do you know what, Clem? It's obviously I had all these questions even before I took the job in how you're going to be and how you're going to act and this, that, and the other. But you know, I said to myself on taking the job, I need to be myself. I can't change from the person I am. The second I try and be someone different and act in a different way, I'm not being myself. And you know, people will see through that. So although I was I was assistant manager for a long time at the football club, I had a very good relationship with the players. But even in that role, I don't think you can become too close to them. Even as an assistant manager, you could, you know, I've got a great relationship where I can sit down and talk to them about football, or about personal stuff and life in general. But I never allowed myself to get too close where, you know, they see me as a friend. And I think even now, I'm the same person. I talk to, you know, I've got to make big decisions and leave some players out. And at the same time, if there's problems at home or in life in general, I have to sit down and have a cup of tea with them and talk about life. So I haven't had to change, and I made that decision myself. I wasn't going to change the person that I am.
Is the delight of a win even greater when you're manager as opposed to assistant? And therefore, is the pain of a defeat, and you've only had that one in the league so far this season, even harder to take?
It's difficult to say, because even as an assistant manager, and as a player, you want to win. You want to win every game that you play.
Of course, yeah.
But I say defeat, I'd say probably more so, although for all my time as assistant manager, it affects your mood, and you're devastated when you lose. But you know, reflecting back at how I felt after Sheffield Wednesday was probably the worst I felt for a long time. Probably, obviously devastated. We got relegated and beat Everton, but got relegated. There was a lot of pain there. But I think because everything's on your shoulders and your people see you solely responsible for everything, I think that on top of the feeling of defeat, I think probably sort of hurts you maybe a little bit more.
Have you had any moments as well where something's come up, a decision has needed to be made, or there's been a situation and you've gone, oh, wait a sec. This is down to me now. I always love asking players that step up to be managers or assistants that step up to be managers this question.
No, not really. I've not, I've got good staff around me. I've got Stephen Purchase, who's now assistant manager, who I've known a long time and I trust 100%. Graham Jones is joined the backroom staff sort of this year, and as well as the other guys that have been at the club a long time. But so I've got good people that I trust that I can bounce things off. But ultimately I know sort of certainly when I'm in game mode and I'm seeing things happen, and you know, I get a feeling if as a manager that you have to react to and make a decision and make a change. And I'd always run it past maybe Perchy, but ultimately, you know, I've had to act and make that decision myself.
You haven't changed at all, mate, have you? You've still got this relaxed demeanour, and I don't mean that in a detrimental way. I don't mean that you're not committed to the job, but you are still absolutely the essence of you. And yet this responsibility sits, I guess, with you all the time at home, family meal times, wherever you go, whatever you're doing, you're carrying the hopes and expectations around with you all the time.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. I'm totally aware of that. But I also, you know, spend a lot of time in the office and planning and doing everything that we feel we need to do to prepare as best as we can for each game. But when I come home, I know I need to, you know, I need to be, I've got two young kids. I need to be there for my kids and family and almost not bring work home with me, although you're always subconsciously thinking of things that you need to do and thinking about football. But there's pressure, of course there is, of winning games, but there's far greater pressures on a lot of other people, sort of, you know, certainly now with what's currently going on in the world, where they can't see loved ones and family and can't feed people, you know, can't feed themselves. And you know, I think that's more pressure than winning football matches, although, you know, winning football matches to me is everything. I can't let, you know, sort of it almost take over my life and everywhere I go sort of bring work home with me. I can't allow it to do that. I need to sort of almost try and find a balance.
Yeah. Have you been at work today? You've been training today?
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I can see you as we're recording this, and you do seem to have... Is that one of the tracksuits on? I'm just trying to see the top of the badge there, yeah?
Yeah.
Do you have any proper clothes, or do you only wear...
Do you know what, Clem? It's probably unusual for me, and Ant will probably back this up, but I try not to wear tracksuit sort of on a day-to-day basis, because you know, you sort of in it on the training ground and afterwards. So I do try and bring out an odd pair of jeans and t-shirt every now and then.
You do mix it up a little bit. Listen, what I love about your story as well is, and probably people don't realize, you've been immersed in football your entire life, really, haven't you? Because you know, I've interviewed you before, but I don't think we've ever discussed this. Your dad Jimmy founded Senrab, which is a very famous boys club in the East End of London, where John Terry started, where Jermaine Defoe was there as well, I think, a little bit.
Ray Wilkins, there was a lot of professional, you know, Ledley King, I think, was another one. But there's the Yeah, so ever since I can remember, Clem, you know, I've always, I think my love for football, I've got to say, come from my dad, because he was manager of Senrab at the time. And ever since I can remember as a little kid, I used to go and watch his teams on the sideline and kick a ball on the side when they're playing. And unfortunately enough for me, it's, you know, I've been in football sort of pretty much my whole life. But I'd say that's where my passion for the game come from.
Yeah. Is he still with us? Is he still
around?
He's
still, yeah. Thankfully he is. And mum and dad, they actually moved down to Bournemouth. I think it was maybe about a year ago they made the decision to move down. So they're closer to home, which is great. You know, I'm lucky to have good family and friends that are there for me and have supported my career all the way through.
Is he in your ear all the time? Is he one of those that's letting his little boy go and do his own thing now and taking a step back?
No, do you know what? I like speaking to Dad, because he's you know, he's honest with what he sees, and I think that's important. And I've said this before. I think we've all got people that we can speak to that will tell us what we like to hear and sort of massage the ego and that sort of thing. But I prefer to speak to a certain select people that will actually tell me as it is and give me their honest opinion, because that's how I am, and I think that's important to me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm sure everybody's asking this all the time, but are you regularly in contact with Ed? Because I'm guessing you were good friends as well as work colleagues all those years and things. I mean, are you talking to him regularly, or has he taken a bit of a gap and left you to it?
He said when I took the job that he was going to, you know, sort of watch from afar and, you know, wish me all the best. And the kids are in the academy, so, you know, sort of see the family and stuff. But he's enjoying his family time at the minute. It's been a long time since he's been able to have that break and spend time with the family.
Yeah, but that's another adjustment, isn't it? To have been so close to somebody for so long and then to not have that relationship in your life, changing sands. And I suppose indicative of what's going on in the world at the moment. Everybody's dealing with change all the time, aren't they?
Yeah, of course, it's difficult. And I think with, as you say, with people not even being able to go to football, you know, it's different and it's difficult. But the job is so, it almost takes over, you know, your life with everything that goes with it. And, you know, when you're in it, you're so consumed. And when you're out of it, I think it's nice to have a break at times.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you've played quite a lot of the teams that are in and around you at the top of the table. You've played quite a lot of what would be considered to be the other contenders. You've got a big game at the weekend in the early kickoff against Reading, who obviously tore away with things, but not so good over the last three games. Are you contenders?
I think if the first 11 games are anything to go by, Clem, I think, you know, we've certainly got to be considered as contenders. You know, we played Norwich at home and, you know, picked up 3 points and won that game. We played Watford away and got a point. So, you know, two teams that you would say would be rivals or there or thereabouts. You know, we've managed to pick up 4 points, which I think is a good return against them two sides, as well as playing some other tough teams in the Championship. So I think we are, and I honestly still don't believe that we've, you know, we're at our best yet. I still think the team's adapting and building new relationships. And, you know, the last game against Birmingham, I was very pleased with the team performance. I felt that was probably the best we've played in some time.
You're loving it?
I'm enjoying it. I mean, I'd be lying if I said I'm not enjoying it. I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the challenge. I'm enjoying, you know, with even the pressure that goes with it. But, you know, I certainly didn't enjoy losing against Sheffield Wednesday. That hurt a lot. But fortunately enough, we bounced back a few days later against Birmingham.
Yeah, you are right. The pain is crucial, isn't it? This is the second conversation we've had since you lost against Sheffield Wednesday, and you've not stopped talking about it.
Yeah, no, it does. I think when, you know, you want to win every game, and, you know, even when we draw and we don't necessarily perform to our best, that you're disappointed and you're sort of asking yourself so many questions. But, you know, certainly when you do lose, it does really hurt and hits you, and you just want to respond and bounce back as quickly as possible. And as I said, you know, thankfully for us, we managed to do that in a real convincing way against Birmingham.
Keep up the great work, mate.
Cheers, Clem. Thanks very much.
This is the official EFL podcast.
So, some big potential talking points across the Sky Bet Championship, Leagues 1 and League 2. Let's explore some of them with the former Wimbledon, Luton Town, West Brom, Aston Villa, Leicester City, Birmingham City, and now Derby County defender Curtis Davis. Do you want your club-specific questions straight away, or would you rather build up to them, Curtis?
I think I'd rather you ease me in, I think.
Okay, I will. Okay, then. Well, I'll tell you what. Possible return of crowds has been hinted at. Apparently, the Prime Minister sees it a personal priority. DCMS have been working on the possibility of supporters returning where infection levels are low by Christmas, having previously suggested we'd have to wait until at least April. Well, I'm going to take that as a positive glimmer I mean, obviously, it's been debated endlessly about the problems that EFL clubs have got at the moment without finances through the turnstiles. Actually, can you give us a few insights from a player's perspective? Because I'm guessing over the course of a dressing room, there'll be those that have thrived, perhaps ones that might have been suffering, the less extrovert players, but there'll be others who have had to completely re-engineer their emotional and mental side of the game because they don't have the kind of approbation or the adrenaline pump, and as a result of 30,000 fans shouting at them.
Yeah, I think it works both ways. You have where, you know, you have a home crowd that get behind you and obviously push you on, and the other side is they keep you honest. So if you're doing something that's a little bit ridiculous or a bit silly, almost treating it like a training ground game because there's no crowd, they're the ones that keep you honest and keep you on it. But also it has the effect where, you know, we played Millwall the back end of last season. I've spoken about this before. And we went there and Louis Sibley, young 18-year-old, scores a hat-trick at Millwall. Now, if Millwall fans are in there, I don't know if that happens. You know, especially grounds like that. You know, where it's a tight ground, hostile atmosphere. It could have been very difficult for him, but he thrived off of it. And I think that's just an example of one player, I think, that really thrived off of that. But then there's others maybe that, you know, they like being the pantomime villain and like to maybe be the villain of the piece to score and then go and hold their ear up to those fans and things like that. So it works both ways. I'm a person that loves having fans in both the negative and the positive because I think it just, like I say, keeps you honest on one side, but also gives you that atmosphere like I'm going to prove them wrong or I'm going to do it to make sure they cheer me. That's my personal thoughts anyway.
But does that come with a position of maturity that in your early days, if you've not got the self-confidence, perhaps they could undermine you at times? But once you've been round the block a few times, no personal insult intended,
just a few.
Curtis, but once you've got a few miles on the clock, then maybe you assimilate it a bit better and use it as a positive motivator like you've just described.
I think it depends on the individual. You know, you'll have players that I don't think a James Maddison, having played against him 2-3 years ago, would have been bothered what the crowd said. He's a player that wants the ball, will do whatever he wants with the ball, find pockets, you know, do skills, do step overs. I don't think the type of player he was in the EFL would have cared. But, you know, there are some youngsters that, you know, they might be getting their first game and it's like a breath of fresh air to know that they've got the support of, they can hear maybe their leader, their captain throughout the whole game, cheering them on and trying to help them. And they can hear their manager giving them the guidance and advice all the way through the game. So I think that side of it can help someone. But if you've got a confident young player, sometimes it just means, well, I'm going to do whatever I do, whether there's crowds here or not, because I believe I'm that good a player. I'm going to show you all how good I am.
Nevertheless, it's a potentially good stepping stone into the senior game, because to go from development age football straight into stadiums with 30,000 in there could be a bit of a daunting prospect for some. At least this has been a way in which some of them are able to find their feet, and then when the crowds do start to flood back, they can add that extra dimension to their game. Hopefully that we won't get used to it, of course.
Yeah, it's a little bit walk before you run, isn't it? It used to be the fact that you'd play in the reserves and you play against, obviously not in front of crowds so much, you'd have a few hundred there maybe, but you're playing against those players that, you know, you'll come up against in first teams. But since that's gone away, it's more younger players are now just used to playing against players their own age. So to step up, one, by level in terms of playing against experienced first team players, but two, into an atmosphere where if you don't do it, the crowd are going to be on you, be it the home crowd or the away crowd. You need to be very strong. So I think it is a good stepping stone. But ultimately, when the crowds do come back, you need to be ready for it, whatever happens. Because if you get your debut and you're in front of 30,000, 50,000 or 3,000, you need to be ready. Because sometimes the grounds where I've been and there's only 3,000 in the stadium, you can hear every single voice. So sometimes hearing that one individual voice can be a lot more cutting than hearing 5,000 in that side of the stand cheering or booing you. Sometimes that's a bit more of an effect on you when you hear that one voice.
Does it stay with you during the game? If you do hear one individual criticise you, how do you get it out of your head to stop undermining you throughout the rest of the game?
Again, I can only speak from my experience. When I hear that one voice, I look for him. And I just, when we go 1-0 up...
What, to go and find them after the match?
No, not like that. No, I'm a very I'm a very calm guy. But
no, you are.
I look for him during the game, and you know, when we go 1-0 up, I'll give him a little wink, or I'll give him a nod and just wave at him or something like that, because it's all pantomime banter, and that's what I enjoy. And that's why, talking about Millwall as an example, I've had it where I've been on the bench at Millwall before. I'm stretching and I'm getting all kinds of abuse, and I just turn around and blow him a kiss, because it's just all banter for me, because I like that edge to it. I like the edge that the away fans hate you and the home fans love you. I like the edge that it keeps you. Like I say, the home fans are going to keep you honest. They're going to be cheering you on. And then you can have that banter that, you know, when you go 1-0 up, that guy that's just been hammering you for the last 80 minutes, you can look at him, give him a wink, and he knows he's not going to say it again.
Is that intuitive? Is that something that you kind of have or you don't? Or can you grow into it?
I think it's a character trait. I think, you know, when we talk about, as an example, social media nowadays, people talk about how you don't respond to people when somebody sends you an abusive message on social media, blah, blah, blah. I've always had a level head. So if in a game I've been rubbish, I know I've been rubbish. If in a game I've been good, I know I've been good. So a fan from, be it the opposition or my own team, are having a go at me or praising me, I know what level I'm at. So I'm not going to be fazed by somebody calling me this and that, or somebody calling me rubbish, or whatever they're going to say. I'm always quite level-headed and quite honest with it. And I think it's just my calm character allows me to be that. But some people are hotheads, and the first sign of, even if the game's going really well for them, you could be 3-0 up. As soon as someone says something to you, they're like looking at them in the crowd and pointing and wanting to do everything to them. But I've always been a calm, level-headed person. So I'm quite fortunate that side, but not everyone is.
Yeah, you have. You have got that sort of voice and that demeanour. I wonder whether we should start a little business together, doing sort of meditation podcasts or something like that. You can voice.
Well, we'll probably put them to sleep with this talk anyway, to be honest, won't we? So.
No. Definitely not. Use of 5 substitutes for the rest of the season has been announced. Sky Bet Championship can name 9 and use 5. Sky Bet Leagues 1 and 2 can name 7 and use 5. Give us a player's perspective on that. Are you knackered with 2 games a week prevalent now?
No, not me. I prefer playing games straight off the back. I know it sounds silly. Obviously, Saturday's ideal, yes, but I like the idea of bouncing into another game and keeping your body going through games, rather than having a long week of training where you maybe overthink certain things or you've got too long to wait for the next game. I'm quite happy with playing, you know, Saturday, Tuesdays or Saturday, Wednesdays. That's no problem for me. But going back to the idea of the young players bedding themselves in, during lockdown, after lockdown, when we came back and started playing football, because we've got 9 subs, it meant maybe those 2 players that would usually travel and be left out were now on the bench. And then if you've got a game where you're maybe winning 2 or 3-0 later on in the game, you can give these lads debuts. You can give them 10, 20 minutes. And that's not in a derogatory way to the opposition team, but it's a way of bedding those players in, because you've got the use of 5 subs, rather than thinking, I've only got 3 subs. Can I really risk putting this young lad on? It doesn't seem a risk when you've got the extra subs ready there to use. And I think that's a good stepping stone for those players as well moving forward.
Thank you very much indeed. Have I eased you in gently?
You have, and I'm ready now.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear it. So, take me through your last, where are we? Well, couple of weeks from the 7th of November and the home defeat for your club, Derby County, by Barnsley.
It's been an interesting time. It's difficult, you know, it's tough being at the bottom. You can't get away from it, you know. People will say, oh, performances haven't been bad, and you know, you're just that close to getting it, but ultimately you need to get that win, you need to get those victories, you need to get up the table, be it with performances, be it by scrapping, whichever way you're going to do it, you need to get performances. And unfortunately we haven't been doing that. We haven't been scoring goals. We haven't been keeping clean sheets, which obviously you're not going to win games and you're going to lose games. So obviously the defeat to Barnsley was tough to take, with all due respect to Barnsley. But that week in general, we played QPR and Barnsley, where last year we would have looked at that as 2 games we should win. And this time we looked at it as 2 games we really needed to win, and we lost both. The Barnsley game particularly was really disappointing, because, you know, the goal we gave away first was unfortunately a mistake by David Marshall. And then from there, Barnsley could sit back, and then second half, we had to go right at them and have a right go. But unfortunately, we got caught on the break and they scored the second. But it's really frustrating. It's really tough. And unfortunately, those results have cost the manager his job.
Yeah, 6 points from 33. I mean, did you feel it coming with Philip Cocu's departure? Do you know? And do you discuss it in the dressing room of what is imminently going to happen? Because I think, you know, obviously the media was starting to discuss it. Clearly fans on social media start to debate it.
I think you're always in the back of your head, you're thinking, what's going to happen? Of course, I think I'd be lying if I didn't say that because, you know, we're a team that, as I say, are considered a big side in terms of stature in the Championship. So for us to be in the position that we're in, usually years ago, especially Derby's record with managers, a manager would be gone. So I think that always plays in your mind and you didn't know whether it was going to happen or not. And then obviously during the international break, the manager and the club have parted ways. And
how do you find out, Curtis? What happens? Is there a WhatsApp group? Does the chief executive call you? I mean, how do you find out about it?
Honest answer, I found out on social media.
Right.
So
did any of the players find out with a more direct route?
I imagine the only one maybe would have been Wayne, just based on the fact that he's part of the coaching team in general. But obviously now he's in a position that he's part of the interim team that are going to lead us. But yeah, I found out. I literally was scrolling through Instagram, saw the gaffer's face and saw that he'd been sacked. So, or shall I say, left by mutual consent. So, yeah, that was quite interesting to find out that way. But it is what it is. it doesn't really make a difference. The manager's gone and we need to start looking forward and a way to win games.
And did you stick under the interim regime to the arrangements that had been made by the previous one? Obviously, Philip Cocu himself was isolating for that last match. But did you return at the point that had been preordained by his setup to then find you've got the interim team, including Wayne, at the helm?
Yeah, so we were due to have the weekend off, the Friday, Saturday, Sunday anyway, of the international break. And then, we were due in on Monday. So it was left the same. And then we came in on Monday to a new regime. Obviously, with Liam Rossignol, who had obviously been there anyway, with Philip, and Justin Walker had been promoted as well. So, but now it's Liam, Justin, Shay and Wayne leading it. Obviously, Wayne's still training as a player as well, but he's got a massive impact on what we do in training, the things he wants to see. So it's an interesting dynamic at the moment. I'm just hoping it works for the weekend because it's all good. We can do whatever we want in a week. We need to make sure on the weekend we get a result.
Yeah, you do seem a little forlorn, mate. There's a fine line between a relaxed demeanour and you do feel a little bit forlorn. Who was it? A meeting first thing you did when you all got in? Did Liam, did Wayne get you together in the dressing room, in the meeting room and say, okay, guys, you've heard the news. This is what's happening now. I mean, what or do you go straight out on the training field? What happens?
Yeah, it was just almost like a brief on what we can expect from them. It was just the fact that they're not going to try and reinvent the wheel as such. It's just trying to get back to more of a basic way of doing things. I guess in their eyes, a more British way of doing things. And have a bit more guidance and a bit more structure to us, I think. So the meeting wasn't too long. It was just to let us know exactly what the team is. And obviously, they're not sure how long they'll be in this role for. So they can't really plan too far ahead. But it was just to give us the information on what's going to happen, what our plan is moving forward. And ultimately, we'll see week to week because, like I say, we could get through Saturday's game, win, lose or draw, and we may have a new manager. So it's just about week in, week out. We're going to try our best. We're all going to work for each other. And hopefully we come out the other side with some results.
Sheffield Wednesday have a new manager. Paul Cook was mooted. Nigel Pearson, former captain of Wednesday, was mooted. But the role has been handed to Tony Pulis. Does that surprise you?
It doesn't surprise me because of Pulis's credentials. Obviously, he's been a top manager for many years. And it doesn't surprise me, that side of it. You know, I thought Paul Cook because obviously you hear in the news that he was a strong favourite, and the way that he finished the season with Wigan, I thought it would have been a good appointment. But you know, Tony Pulis is has an outstanding track record. You know what he can do, the way he can rescue clubs as well. So the position that Sheffield Wednesday find themselves in, I'm sure he'll be going in there doing his usual team shape, organisation, set pieces, getting the team as tip-top as they can to know all the information that, that they require to make sure that come the weekend they're ready for the first game, because he'll want to hit the ground running and he'll want to be showing his name that, that he's back and he's back with a bang.
That first game is away at Deepdale against Preston. Some intriguing fixtures this weekend. A Friday night game, Coventry against one of your former clubs, Birmingham. But, you know, so Birmingham turning up as the away team. I love little anomalies like that's weird, isn't it? To sort of turn up and go into the away dressing room when you're so used to using the home dressing room.
Yeah, it happened last year in the Cup. I think they got a cup replay. So it obviously will be weird that you're used to sitting in your spot and then the next week you're playing against them and you're in a different spot in the away change room. But it's something, obviously, for both teams. It's only one game. But at least the in terms of the ground and everything around it is familiar. So you should feel like you're playing at home regardless.
Elsewhere, Norwich are away at Middlesbrough with that long, glorious, unbeaten record. The best in the top four divisions. That is Middlesbrough, not Norwich, that I'm talking about. And Watford are at QPR. In League One, Sunderland takeover news. No confirmation from the EFL at this stage, but the club themselves have announced that Juan Satori, who has been at the club for a while, and Kirill Louis-Dreyfus, son of Robert Louis-Dreyfus, the former owner of Marseille, are set to become 80% owners. The current owner, Stuart Donald, will hang on to 15%, as will his sidekick, Charlie Methven, keep 5%. I mean, that is a club that desperately needs to get going again, Curtis, isn't it? And do you think the longer it goes on by having mundane seasons in League One, the harder it becomes to fully get going and to climb out of it again?
I think the thing that will be difficult for Sunderland is the fact that there's a wage cap, if I'm being totally honest. Because for whatever money this new owner can bring into the football club, because there's a wage cap in League One, he's not going to be able to get the better players to be able to step over the other teams and make themselves almost guaranteed to go up. So in previous history, Sunderland, because of, obviously at the moment we don't have crowds, but because Sunderland get 40,000 fans for home games, they obviously have the backing and the money to get these players in and support these players. But even if this owner comes in, because of the wage cap, they won't be able to, unfortunately, attract the players maybe to pay over the odds to, you know, nick players from the Championship, things like that. I don't think they'll be able to do that anymore. So that's going to be interesting moving forward because, like I say, this person comes in with money. If they can't spend it, what good is it? And that's my opinion of it. But I do believe the owner's been trying to get out for a while. So I think it's good that somebody is really interested in taking the club forward because it's a massive, massive football club. And it's definitely a football club that shouldn't be in League One.
Elsewhere, Bristol Rovers parted company with Ben Garner after a 4-1 home defeat to Fleetwood Town. 3 wins in 11 this season, 6 in 33 since he signed up on the 23rd of December last year. It's a tough old world out there, Curtis, isn't it?
It is, but management's a ruthless game. You know, I think, I can't remember what the exact time, but I don't think many managers get more than, what is it, a year or something in the average?
A year and a half, yeah, I think. It depends on the like division and things, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, for a young manager starting in the game, meant to have been mentored by Jose Mourinho at Chelsea, apparently, it's really tough for him to take. He's going to need to do a little bit more, obviously, now for the next job because, unfortunately, the game's very tough and you see the top managers that are out of jobs. So for a manager that's maybe in his first major role to lose his job that quickly, it's really unfortunate and it's tough to take.
Yeah, you have to take the jobs, the opportunities when they come along, don't you? Even though you might not be ready, that you might not get another stab at it. So you've got to go in there when somebody says, why don't you give it a go?
I think a lot that is the case. And, you know, you've spoken about the fact I'm coming towards the end of my career. You know, there could be a time I get an awkward situation where I want to carry on playing, but somebody might offer me a coaching or management job and I have to consider stepping away. So sometimes it don't get me wrong, I still believe it needs to be the right job, because you don't want to be somewhere where you really feel you can't bring anything to the table. But ultimately, if you go into that job and you improve a team, your stock will automatically go straight up, and then all of a sudden you find yourself on the list of managers' jobs when other big jobs come available.
Peterborough and Hull occupy the automatic promotion places in League One, Ipswich, Charlton, Lincoln and Portsmouth in the playoff places, Sunderland just below. Fixtures this weekend, 1 o'clock kickoff on Saturday. Charlton have won their last six, face Gillingham. We've got eighth against ninth as Fleetwood take on Plymouth. Peterborough at home to Blackpool, 7 wins and 8, but lost last weekend at Crewe, who've won their last two. And two of the bottom four play each other as Wigan take on Oxford United. In League Two, first league win for Mansfield Town, and first league win, and in fact first win after 16 previous attempts in all competitions for Southend United. The game before that, just a few days before, supporters padlocked the gates of Roots Hall in displeasure after a 6-1 Papa John's Trophy defeat to local rivals Colchester United. It was Emil Aqua who got an 88th minute winner at Walsall. And I guess when you're in the sort of mess that Southend were in, that puts a completely different complexion on things, Curtis. Talk about sense of relief.
Yeah, it's a massive sense of relief. Obviously, the club's been on a downward spiral for the last couple of years. So, obviously, for your fans to turn up and padlock your gates because of a defeat to your rivals is saying something. So for them,
I'm assuming the players' cars were parked in the. I'm assuming this, that the players' cars might have been parked at Roots Hall to get the coach or a couple of coaches to go, and they come back and find that some bright spark has been to B&Q, bought a couple of dirty, big, heavy-duty padlocks, and locked the gates.
Yeah, possibly. But yeah, you know, it's a difficult situation. Listen, we find ourselves in a similar situation. We've had that one win this season. We beat Norwich, a massive team in this league. But ultimately, it's about that next win. So for them, if they're able to bounce into another result, that's well and good. But unfortunately, they don't want to find themselves in a situation like ours where you get that one win and you're unable to back it up.
Newport, Cambridge and Cheltenham in the top three. The automatic promotion places Exeter, Forest Green, Carlisle and Colchester occupy the current playoff places. It's Colchester who head to Mansfield Town in the Friday night game. Nigel Clough, 3 wins in all competitions in a week. Elsewhere in League Two, we've got Cheltenham, currently third, at home to Walsall. Leaders Newport entertain Port Vale, have lost their last two. Second place Cambridge are at Southend. And we must have a quick word about Tranmere. Ian Dawes, interim manager, 2 consecutive league wins, 4 consecutive in all competitions. They take on Grimsby Town. Kurt, it's great to see you, mate. I'm a little bit worried about you. I think your demeanour reflects the current position of your football club. Are you being this much of a curmudgeon and grouch around home, or are you a bit more cheerful with the family?
I'm definitely not a grouch. I'm just realistic. Unfortunately, if I'm on here laughing and smiling about what's happening at my football club, I'd be kidding myself. So it's not good times, but listen, it can't get much worse. That's what I will say. So we need to find a way out of it. And I'm hoping next time we speak, I'll have a big, big smile on my face.
Beautifully handled, as always. Great to talk to you, mate.
Take care.
That's it for this week. A massive thanks to Curtis Davis and to Jason Tindall. If you've enjoyed this week's episode, then feel free to give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and please share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you next week for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.